Randy. And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Tony from Downey.
Hi, I'm Tony Campuzano. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me tonight. I want to thank Damien for inviting me out and being so enthusiastic and a really good example of enthusiasm for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that you guys have this interpreter here. I kind of feel bad for her because I'm a fast talker, so I'm going to like want to look over and see. Just like, oh. So, I really love that everybody gets to listen to the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, the language of the heart. So thank you for that service. I want to thank my boyfriend Rocky for driving me out tonight, and for my newcomer Amy. You know, when I was a newcomer, my sponsor said, you know, when I came to the program, I was 23. My sobriety date is April 19th of 2002. And, you know, I was waiting for my sponsor to pick me up, and I was miserable, and I was new, and I was too cool. And, you know, my sponsor rolls up, and she's like, yep, nothing like my cup of coffee and my sponsee and going to a meeting on a Saturday night. And I'm like, oh, my God. I should just kill myself now. And you know, tonight I got in the car with a newcomer and some coffee, and we, like, my face hurt from smiling by the time we got up here. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love that that's what my life is about today. I am the youngest of three girls. My dad is a marijuano, which means he smokes a lot of pot. And my mom is the Latin Peg Bundy. I swear to God, she's got the walk and everything is so awesome. But, you know, my dad is a drunk, and, you know, my earliest, like, one of my fondest memories of dad is my sisters and I always made fun of him because he was always smoking pot, but we always wanted him to smoke pot because if he was just drinking, you know, he might get crazy in the fights, and you know, he was known for going to jail for, you know, beating people up, and, you know, sometimes it was my mom, and, you know, we were happy if he had the pot, but we used to make fun of him because his thing was always like, I never want to see you smoking this crap, mijo. So from, like, really early on, like, we got the idea that, you know, we do what dad says, not what he does, and I learned that very early on. I remember, like, in first or second grade, you know, we were making these, like, wind chimes for dads on Father's Day. And I was, like, I took my clay, and instead of making a wind chime, I made a cigarette ashtray for his little. And then, like, my teacher was like, oh, your parents, your dad smokes cigarettes? I'm like, no. But, you know, that alcoholic life, you know, from when I was a kid, it was the only normal one I knew. You know, that was I thought everybody's dad was going to jail for beating up their mom. I thought everybody moved into 15 apartments. You know, to that, you know, from this day, like, when I smell fresh paint, it reminds me of, like, my stomach turns, like, oh, man, I have to start over. I have to make new friends. I have to go to a new school. And, you know, so that was, like, my childhood growing up. I also was pretty resentful. You know, I have two older sisters, and their names are Denise Marie and Diana Rochelle. And my parents named me Antonia Leonor, and I just thought that was so cruel. You know, now I like my name, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, back then it was, like, horrible. And, you know, and I have two sisters, Denise, she's, like, tiny, she's, like, a size zero cheerleader, like, was good at everything, super popular, and then my sister Diane, she's really big, she's vulgar, she's got tattoos on her neck, she looks like a Jerry Springer guest. She's my favorite sister, I kid you not. So I'm not talking about her. And I tell her that I say that about her, too, so she doesn't mind. She likes it. So, you know, I always knew that I was different. I knew that there was something wrong with me. I always felt like I was stupid. We were always broke, so I didn't have good clothes, and I always had that thing, like, I didn't measure up. From my earliest memory, I didn't measure up, and by the time I got to sixth grade, my parents had split up, and we were like, thank God, because they were just crazy together. And So at this point, I'm in sixth grade. I'm in like my gazillion school, it felt like. And, I had my first drinking experience. I was in the sixth grade drinking with my best friend, Narina Larry, and we shared a 40-ounce of King Cobra. And I love malt liquor. I love everything, but I really love malt liquor. And so we shared this 40-ounce, and we walked two blocks from her house to my house. And I didn't get drunk, but I felt the magic that alcohol had for me. Like, I got that, you know, I got those 20 ounces down, and I'm walking down the street, and the sun was setting, and, like, my cheeks were tingly, and I felt okay for the first time. And I couldn't wait to drink again. And the next opportunity I got to drink, I was in the seventh grade, and I was always hanging out with people older than me, and so I'm hanging out with these girls from high school, and one of their moms has gone out of town, and you know, we decide that somebody bought like a Lucky Brand plastic vodka bottle, like with the, you know, handle. It was awesome. And we mixed it with like Kool-Aid and Gatorade. It was so gross, and we just passed it around, and we got wasted, and we trashed her apartment, and I don't remember what happened. That was my first blackout, and, you know, the next day, it was, like, the most fun experience, blah, 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 until the next day when that girl is calling me, Heather, and she was like, you need to come down here. My mom's pissed. You know, she found out we were drinking, and I just kind of, like, froze, and my sister, you know, the ghetto one, like, at this point, she's got nails, like, out to here, and so I tell her, like, oh, my God, this girl, like, she's yelling at me. And so she picks up the phone, and my sister gets in, and she starts wagging her neck, and then like she goes down there and just beats this girl up, and like breaks in the house, beats this girl up, and like she comes back from you know, this girl's apartment, and like her nail that, you know, you ain't got to lie, Craig, nails, she's got this, and like there's all this blonde hair sticking out of it. I'm like, oh my God. And it was a disaster. Like, my drinking even then was a big disaster. And but I couldn't wait to do it again. Like, my sister got in trouble. She had to go to juvenile hall, like, do all this stuff. But nobody, like, everybody knew not to mess with me. It was really, I got a really good reputation after that. And so that was okay with me. And, you know, so I didn't become an everyday drinker from that time on. But I did drink every opportunity that I got. And, you know, I dropped out of high school because, you know, I just didn't have the cool clothes. And I felt less than, and I was so concerned about what other people thought of me. Like, it was crippling. So I decided just to stay home and be like that, you know, person in high school that you could come by and, like, smoke a bowl with, or, like, drink at my house, or, you know, and I felt less than. I wasn't good at school, and so I just dropped out. And so 16 to 20, I'm drinking every chance I get. Now, my mom went through this weird thing that she, like, got hooked on methamphetamine. And my dad hadn't been in my life in a long time. I know, can you imagine Peg Bundy on methamphetamine? Yikes. Oh. So, my dad hadn't been in my life in a long time, and my mom had had this drug addiction, and like one day from the next, she was like, we don't have any place to live. I don't have a place for you to go. Like, you're going to have to figure something out. And I was pissed. And so I started living on couches, and I got really good at manipulating. And I would go over friends' houses, and I would, you know, sing them my sad song about my drunk dad and my mom on meth. And it was just, you know, crazy. And I learned how to use people, you know. That's how I survived 19 to 21. When I turned 21, my mom's mom got sick. I'm actually from Northern California. I'm from San Jose. And my mom's mom got sick, and she lived in Arizona. And so she went out there to be with, you know, her mom on her last days. And, you know, something happened for my mom. She just got away from the drugs, and she's never touched them again. And so I was kind of like, I didn't know where I was going. Everybody was kind of like on my case, like, you should get a job. But really, all I wanted to do was hang out with my ghetto sister and, like, get credit for Mickey 40 ounces. That's what I wanted to do. I could have done that for the rest of my life. But, you know, people were kind of on my case. And so I moved to Arizona thinking that, you know, I'd get a fresh start there. And so I moved out to Arizona, and my drinking progressed. I have a ton of family out there. So I would just live on couches, and I would, like, look through the, you know, the newspaper, pretending to go look for jobs. And, you know, I was just kind of like coasting. And, you know, I had an aunt who was really on my case. And so, you know, I would try to go work these jobs. And really, I just became better at being, at manipulating. And at this time, I'm going out from like Thursday to Sunday night, and I'm having a really good time. I'm 21, and I had gone to a bar out in Phoenix, and I was drinking with my friends, and the security guard comes up to me, and he goes, listen, they're having a miniskirt contest tonight, and you really need to, like, you need to get in there. They're going to give $500 away. I'm like, I'm wearing pants. Like, I'm not going to enter this miniskirt contest. That's lame. And he's like, no. And he handed me a shot of tequila. And I'm like, all right. And he just kept buying me drinks. He said, come on, I'll buy you a couple drinks. I'm like, okay. And so I enter this miniskirt contest wearing a pair of pants, and I won $500. And I'm like, you know, my family's on my case. I figured this is the perfect job for me. Like, this seriously was like, I found my calling. Like, why wouldn't I want to do it? This was my new hustle. So I would hit up all the miniskirt contests and shake that thing contests, and I was really good at it, and it was really fun. And that's what I did to get by. And so I had gone out partying in Mexico, and I had met this guy on the beach, some random guy, and you know, he was different, and he was, like, different from anybody else out there partying that day, and it was kind of like love at first sight for me. And, you know, I ended up, because, you know, even though, like, I had had all these, like, crazy drinking experiences, like, and even though, like, I grew up with this crazy family, I did have some morals, you know. And on this night, I hooked up with this guy, and I had a one-night stand with him, and I had, like, really, like, even a lot of shame about that. And so I figured, clearly, this is out of my character, so clearly he is the one. And so and so he was from L.A., and I was living in Arizona, and he, you know, I had just won another Shake That Thing contest, and he invited me out to L.A., and, you know, I came out here, and, you know, I spent a weekend with my girlfriends, and it's Sunday, and they're packing up, and I got that pit in, like, the middle of my stomach. And I thought, I knew I wasn't going back. And so they're packing up, and I'm like, I'm not going. They're like, what do you mean you're not going? I'm like, I'm going to stay here. I'm like, I think I'll be okay, you know. And so they took off, and I started to, you know, work in bars in downtown L.A., and I lived out of motel rooms. And at this point, my drinking has gone from, like, party, fun, drinking every day to, like, desperation drinking. I'm starting to feel sick in the morning. I'm starting to feel shaky. I'm not quite sure why. I think it's because I'm nervous, because I miss my family. I had made up all these, like, crazy ideas of, you know, how it could be this or that. And, you know, I'm working in the bars. This guy comes in, and, you know, yet another him. And, you know, he was different. He was a musician, and he was, you know, going to help me. But I had no friends. I had nobody. And I'm living in motel rooms, and so I began to depend on his company. And for some reason, like, he really, like, he wanted, you know, it to work out. And so he would say, he had a problem with my drinking. And he would say, you know, when you're at work, you shouldn't drink. Because people that go to work for work and money, like, people don't drink at work. So, like, even though you work in a bar, you probably shouldn't drink so much. And so I really liked him, and he's all I had. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna give this a try. And, you know, I would get to work, and I'm like, would just be start itching, and I would be serving liquor. And I would say, beer's good. Because beer's what you drink when you're not drinking, right? That's what I drink when I'm not drinking. And so, you know, this regular patron came in, and he was like, give me some Patron. Like, I just got a raise, and I'm going to pay you $20 for every double shot of Patron tequila you take with me. And I'm like, hell yeah, I got a sucker. I'm going to make some money tonight, because that's what I'm good at. I'm good at drinking. And so, but, like, I'm really, like, I had a date with my boyfriend that night. He, you know, I got into a taxi, and, like, you know, when you're drunk, like, you really think that you can hide it. I don't know. For some reason, when I was drinking, I felt like I could get over on anybody. I don't know why. But, you know, so I get to his house, and I'm, like, on double shots of tequila. And I don't even like tequila. I'm a Jack Daniels drinker. I love whiskey. I love single-barrel Jack Daniels. That's my drink. And I took a taxi to his house, and, you know, I knock on the door, and I'm like, don't act drunk. Don't act drunk. Like, you know, just, like, you know, trying to act the part. And he opens the door, and he's like, I made you spaghetti. And I'm like, oh, damn. So I'm like, okay, just, you know, work through it. Just got to work through it. And so, like, I'm eating the spaghetti, and he says, you know, I got some pot. Let's take some bong rips. Now, I am not, I don't like drugs. I'm not a smoker. I never, it's not really been my thing. But I'm a show off. So I have to show him how good I am at doing this, right? So I've got the bong, and I'm, like, taking up, like, these big, massive rips, and I'm, like, and as I exhale, I realize it's coming. Sorry. Projectile spaghetti and tequila, people. It was bad. And there was not going to be a good end to the story. And so... So I came to next to the toilet, and this guy that was all I had dragged me from the bathroom into his bedroom where he completely beat me up. I couldn't hear out of my right ear. I had a black eye. It was kind of like an out-of-body experience for me because he had those a mirrored closet, and I just saw myself being thrown all around this room like a little doll. And I was like, what happened to me? You know, what happened in my life? And then he kicked me out on the doorstep of this busy street in L.A., and I was still in the bikini I worked in the night before, and I had nothing on me but a bag full of bikinis and a bottle of Jack Daniels, and this lady walked by and said, you know, can I get you some help? Can I make a phone call for you? She called a taxi for me, and I sat in the back of that, you know, taxi cab with a bloody nose, hitting a hot bottle of whiskey, thinking, what happened to me? And, you know, it was around that time that I was, you know, working at this bar, and this security guard was like, damn, Tony, aren't you tired of living in motel rooms? And I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, whatever. Like, to me, like, when I came to AA and you guys told me that we take it a day at a time here, I got it, because that's how I lived out there. I lived a day at a time. Every day for me was like Groundhog's Day. I would get to the club, I would work till like 1:30, I would get a taxi, I would get a bottle, and I would get another motel, and that was my life every single day. And, you know, I was living in motels, and this guy, you know, gave me a chance. He's like, you know what? I'm leaving my wife. She lives in Downey. You know, you could be her roommate. She's pretty cool. And I was like, okay. Just because, like, everything in my life was just like, okay, Tony, you want to go to Vegas? Okay. You want to live in the gutter? Okay. You know, just like everything. If as long as I had my bottle, everything was okay. And so I'm living in Downey, and I, you know, hit it off really well with this girl that was my new roommate, and I was drinking in the morning, and I don't know about you guys, but I love the taste. I love the feeling of whiskey on an empty stomach. Like, that to me is like the best breakfast ever. And but something started happening to me. I was getting more and more nervous, the shakes gotten worse, and all of a sudden, like, I'm dry heaving, and I'm throwing up stomach bile, and I'm shaking, and I can't get rid of it. And I would tell my friend, like, yeah, just get me out of here. I feel like I'm going to freak out. Like, little did I know, like, I was going into tremors. And, you know, I had gone to the emergency room because I was a mess, and the first time I went, I gave him my real name and my real social, and then, you know, they gave me an IV bag, and I dried out, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't, like, drink whiskey. Maybe I should keep more in contact with my family. Maybe that'll help. And so finally, it happened again, because it's inevitable, you know, tapering off or like drinking less is a good idea, but I don't know how to do that. So I ended up back, you know, a couple weeks later, I actually got something in the mail. Like, I had to pay like $900 for my ER stay. And I'm like, that is crazy. And my friend was like, Tony, you don't give him your real name and your real social when you go to the emergency room. You give him a fake name and a fake social. So you have to pay it. And I'm like, perfect. Because, you know, I'm one of those dirtbag people. I'm a taker, and I'm a user of people. And, so because I don't know how to not drink, I ended up in the emergency room again, the same emergency room, how embarrassing, Downey Regional, and I go under there, and I give him a fake name and a fake social, and it works. And then I go again and again. It's probably the third or fourth time I had gone. I had given the name Maria de los Santos, and I'd give him a fake social, and the emergency room doctor came in, and he grabbed me by my arm, and he said, Antonia, just is my real name. He said, if you don't quit drinking, there's not going to be anything pretty left about you. You are going to die of alcoholism. And, I wish I could tell you, that was enough for me that I just walked out of there and I'm like, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to find recovery. But that's not my story. I got out of there that night and I got myself another bottle of whiskey because I don't know how to not drink. And that's a good idea. But I could not fathom my life without alcohol. And around this time, my roommate had this friend, and for some reason, I was not getting any suitors knocking on my door. Let me tell you, I was a hot mess. And this guy, you know, he told my friend that he wanted to take me out on a date. And so I was not at all interested in him. He was not my type at all. And she said, come on, he's really cool. You'll really like him. He's awesome. And so just as a favor to her, I said, you know, I was going to go out with this guy one time. And he took me out. It was a Friday night. And he said, you know, I'd really like to take you to this restaurant tomorrow night. And I said, no, I have to work tomorrow night. I have to make rent. And he's like, well, how much is your rent? And I'm like, it's $500, my portion. And he's like, no problem. So he pulled it out of his wallet and just handed it to me. And I'm like, yes. You know, because I am not a self-supporting woman. At this point, my hat's off to the people that can go to work every day. That is not my story. Like, I need to drink 24 hours. I'm shaking in the morning. And if you are unlucky enough to meet me in the morning and I'm still, dry heaving, I'm going like this. I'm okay. I just need a drink. And that's what I look like. And so for some reason, this crazy guy wanted to date me, and it was perfect. And he was a drug dealer. He was a farmer. He grew weed. And he was really good at it. And he would set people up in rentals, and he would pay their rent, and he would turn their back room or garage into a greenhouse, and then he would just, you know, set up crop, and every couple months, we'd get a crop that came in, and, you know, it was a really good life for me. You know, I had, you know, he took care of me, and I didn't have to want for anything, and yeah, I had a great Christmas that year, and I had everything I wanted. Like, I was seriously the Paris Hilton of Pico Rivera. I'm not kidding. Like, anything you wanted. Like, he would, have his friend say, I'm going to come over and, pick up an ounce or a sack or whatever. He'd be like, okay, we'll pick up my girl bottle of Jack Daniels before you come. Or, you need to go to Nordstrom and pick up some makeup for my girlfriend. And I thought I had arrived. It was perfect for me. The problem with that was, he had, you know, again, he had problems with my drinking. And he would say, Tony, I will buy you anything if you just don't drink today. I will give you anything you want if you don't drink today. And I wish I could tell you I could stop. And I couldn't. There's nothing that I wanted more than the feeling of relief that came for me when I drank. And so simultaneously, I meet this guy who rents a room from he's next to the greenhouse in that crazy house that I lived in with my farmer boyfriend. And he had moved, he was really cool, and he moved out, though. All of a sudden, he just moved out of the house. And we're like, Mike, where are you going? You're crazy. You have all the weed you could smoke. You have any drug you could ever want. And he'd be like, I'm getting sober. I'm like we'd say, what's up, Mike? He'd be like, sobriety. Sobriety is what's up. What a freaking lame. We'd laugh at him. We would laugh at him. And so, we were you know, he moved out, and he's you know, we just made fun of him, oh, you're going to AA, and just, you know, laughing at him and stuff, and just made fun of him. But interestingly enough, 60 days later, he came back to pick up his mail. He had 60 days of sobriety. And I'll never forget what he looked like. His skin was glowing. His eyes were bright. He was a completely different person. And I don't ever want to forget what I looked like that day. I was sitting in front of that coffee table with the bottle of Jack Daniels. It's about 6:30. I'm still waiting to feel better. I'm nursing that bottle, waiting to feel better, waiting to stop shaking. And he walks in, and I said, oh, my God, Mike, you look so good. What have you been doing? And he said, you know, Tony, all I've been doing is going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, at the end of the meetings, we pray for the alcoholic who still suffers, and that prayer is just long enough for me to say your name. And I heard it. I saw that message And it wasn't by him telling me, Tony, you need to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You need to sponsor. You need to take the steps, blah, blah, blah. He was a beautiful example of attraction rather than promotion. I saw that he was different, and he carried the message to me. And I wasn't ready from that time on. But what ended up happening was that boyfriend got tired. Oh, my God, I'll never forget this. He's like, you know, I can't watch you kill yourself anymore. That is so unattractive to me. Like when I was, like when you're drinking and somebody tells you I can't watch you kill you. It was like one of those surreal moments. I kind of felt like I was on like a bad ABC after school special or something, you know, like I can't watch yourself kill yourself. It's just like, so I'm just like, oh man, get me out of here. And so, but you know, it ended up going, like he said, it's either the drinking or me. Like that's a hard choice, right? And I packed my stuff up. And I threw all of my belongings. At this time, I used to drive a 65 Chevy El Camino. Oh, my God. And I packed all my belongings into that thing, bikini and makeup, that's what I had, and high heels. And I threw everything in the back of that that El Camino, and I went back to working in the bars. And a couple days later, you know, I was pulling out of the club, and this guy in a new Impala, like, kind of revved up on me, and I was like, I'm going to smoke you. And so, like, I'm racing him down Olympic Boulevard, and then I see the sirens, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, and I'm thinking, I can totally get out of this. And as soon as I roll down the window, the cop's like, how much have you been drinking? And I drink all day. And I was like, oh, I've only had a couple. And, you know, I just remember, you know, the whole rundown, you know, got me out of the car, arrested me, and I plucked off my fake eyelashes. And, you know, I start crying in the back of the cop car. And he's like, what's wrong? Why are you crying? I'm like, because they're going to beat me up. And he's like, who? Who's going to beat you up? I'm like, the woman in jail. And he's like, why? And I'm like, because I'm too pretty. But I wasn't. That's the fun. That is the irony of this thing. Like, I was not pretty. Like, I look like 10 pounds of sugar in a 5-pound bag. My hair was orange. And if I took a lie detector test, I swear to God, I thought I was blonde. I swear to God. And I was just a wreck. I was a total wreck. And so, you know, I ended up going to jail, and I was scared for a lot of reasons. I thought I was going to get beat up, but also because I knew that come 6 a.m., I'm going to be crawling out of my skin needing a drink. And I know that if I'm in jail, I'm going to be far from one. And I got booked. They did the whole, you know, fingerprinting, and they shut that jail cell. And for some reason, I knew it was over. Like, I took a deep breath, and I knew that it was over. I remembered my friend Mike, who said that he prayed for me at the end of the meetings, and I figured that if he got sober, maybe I could too. And so I called, you know, my farmer boyfriend, because that's the only, like, I drank everybody out of my life. I was not in contact with my family. I would go for months without talking to them. I had a lot of shame about the way that I was living, and so I had nobody but him. And so I called him. And he, you know, he arranged to, you know, get a bail bondsman, and they got me out. And I called my friend Mike, because I thought, you know, I knew that if he could stay sober, I could too. But the most miraculous thing for me that happened is I was sick and shaking and, like, dry heaving every morning. But for some reason, in that jail cell that morning, I was not sick. I was not shaking. I could breathe for the first time, and I knew that I had a gift, and I knew that I had to hang on to it. And so, you know, when I got out, I called my friend Mike, and he picked me up, and he, you know, we went to a meeting. And I don't know, you guys have probably heard of this group, but at the time he was going to Monday Night Bellflower Big Book Group. I didn't know anything about that group. And so I show up in the outfit that I had been arrested in, that I had been working in the bar in that night before. So I can just tell you, it was not a vision for you. And there was a long line of women dressed kind of like how I'm dressed tonight, in a dress. And I think, God, does everybody have fancy jobs here? And somebody told me, no, Tony, these people, you know, do it out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous and to be an example. And I walked through that that greeter line, and everybody gave me their card, and all the women were so excited, and they were like, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so popular already. And really, it was just, I was just really sick. I was really sick, and people really wanted to help me, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous for that. And so my home group is in Downey, and I remember, you know, going to my Friday night meeting, and I heard this lady with short red hair cracking up and laughing and having a good time, and I asked her to be my sponsor, and she was fun and funny, and I was really new in sobriety, and she said, Tony, you going to go to the sober dance Friday night? And I'm like, waste all my good moves on you losers, right? I'm not going to go to your lame AA dance. And she's like, come on, Tony, it'll be fun. I'll teach you how to do the cabbage patch. This crazy lady. And but what happened for me, and thank God, like I lost that thing where like I had to be cool. Like it was okay to just laugh at this lady's jokes. And it was okay to get on the dance floor and dance because I'm joyful and because I'm sober. Not because like I'm trying to do the mating call to see who's going to go home with me tonight, you know? Like my life has changed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then at 60 days of sobriety, I was still living with the farmer. And, you know, I get home from a meeting one day and there was, you know, police at the end of the driveway, and as soon as I got out of the car, they knew who I was. They're like, you're Antonia, you're going to jail. And I said, you know what, I am 60 days sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Can you please let me go to my sponsor's house or let me go to recovery home? Because, you know, I really don't want to live like this either. I just didn't know what to do. And he looked at me and he said, you're with this loser? Like, what are you doing? And that's when I realized that in 60 days, Alcoholics Anonymous had changed me. Like, I didn't have a bra. My sponsor said, baby, you need a bra, you know? Like, and so, like, I started going in, and you guys taught me how to be a lady because I did not know. And so I was showing up at meetings, and I was doing the thing. And, you know, that's when I knew Alcoholics Anonymous had already changed me, because had they gone to the house 60 days prior, I would have gone to jail for sure, because I would have looked like a dope dealer's girlfriend, you know? And they ended up letting me go to my sponsor's house. Well, I chose my sponsor's house because I was scared the women in the recovery home were going to steal my makeup. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But that was all I had. That's how I survived out there, you know, as an alcoholic woman. So that was really hard for me to let go. But as I got to being, you know, in the middle of an awesome home group, as I started to take the steps, I began to change and not depend on my outsides. I began to depend on you guys, the fellowship, and, you know, my sponsor, taking the steps. And, you know, I've had so many awesome experiences in sobriety. I really feel like I've learned how to live here. I ended up, you know, in my third year of sobriety, I met a guy on AA campus, and we ended up getting married and pregnant, and I was scared, and I didn't think that I had what it took to become a mom, and, you know, my sponsor told me things like, Tony, it takes 9 months to make a baby. Like, God is going to change you in those 9 months, and the women in the program showed up for me, and, like, I have been so taken care of here. My first job in sobriety was pushing shopping carts at Pavilions, and, like, that job, along with what I started to learn in AA, changed my life, because I got to ask people, how are you doing today? Can I help you out, Mrs. Smith? Like, I don't talk to people like that. I'm like, if I'm giving you a compliment, if I'm helping you, I've got my other hand out, like, where's mine? Give me. And because that's, you know, that's the nature of the disease, and that's how I am as an alcoholic woman. And you know, that job started to change me, and I made minimum wage, and I was able to pay my rent. Like, I would go to my Friday night meeting, and somebody would buy me, you know, something to eat at Coco's. They'd buy me a coffee. And, you know, I've had really great examples of sponsorship and fellowship. And, you know, I love my home group because we show up for people. You know, sponsorship has changed my life. You know, this, as time went on, you know, I got a really bad resentment in my eighth year of sobriety. I was resentful at my ex-husband. Things were really bad, and it was really dark for me. And you know how, like, when real crazy people, like, when you tell them they're crazy, they don't believe you. Because that's how really crazy people, that's how I was in my eighth year of sobriety. And I am so grateful, like, that my feet are planted in Alcoholics Anonymous, that no matter what, over the years, like, I go to meetings. That has never been an issue for me. My sponsor is, you know, says that meeting makers make it, and I'm all about meetings. And I really believe, looking back at my eighth year of sobriety, that saved my sobriety. I was blind you know, with this resentment, and you know, looking back now, I see that I could have gotten drunk. And I, you know, I knew I was crazy because people would say, Tony, you're crazy. And like my AA sisters, my sponsor, she's like, you're crazier than anybody. I'm like, oh my God. Like, and I'm so grateful that I didn't say, that I didn't get resentful and say, you know what, it's that group. I'm going to move on. Like, you know what, I'm going to just like get out of here. And I'm grateful that I didn't have to take a drink through all that. But, you know, when I was a newcomer, I did not know how to live. Like, you had to give me, like, direction. Like, I was drunk all the time. Like, I had no idea. I didn't even know what to like. Do I like lemonade? Do I like water? Do I drink soda? I don't know, because all I drank was whiskey and beer. And so, like, I didn't know, like, the fundamental idea of how to live. I did not know how to do it. So I'd call my sponsor a billion times a day, and she'd say, Tony, eat something, eat a piece of toast, drink some coffee, and go to the noon meeting. And that was my direction for like the first 4 months of my sobriety. And as I'm going through this divorce with my ex-husband, you know, we had two little boys. They're 4 and 6 now. And we were going through this divorce, and I was 8 years sober. And I got some bad news one day in court, and I felt like I had been punched, and like in the stomach, just completely defeated. And I called my sponsor, and I said, Nancy, this is what happened. And she said, well, what time is it? And I said, well, it's like 11 o'clock. She's like, why don't you grab yourself a cup of coffee and go to the noon meeting? I was like, lady, did you hear me? And I was thinking, is there going to be a free lawyer at the noon meeting? Because that's what I need. And I went to that noon meeting, and I heard the language of the heart. I heard the experience, strength, and hope. And when I left that meeting, I felt like I could handle the rest of those 24 hours. Like everything, I love how Alcoholics Anonymous works. But also through that very hard period of time for me, we started doing 50% custody, you know, with my kids. And right as that was happening, I felt like a newcomer. I felt crazy. I felt like afraid for my kids all the time. And that's when this girl came into my life. And, you know, Amy changed my life that year. And because I was not afraid about what my ex-husband was doing with my kids, about what, you know, I was not focused on them. I got to focus on a newcomer who needed rides, who needed step-by-step direction, who needed to be told, Amy, you're crazy. Get yourself some cups, get yourself some coffee, and go to the noon meeting. And I just love how that works. And, you know, she ended up having, you know, to leave us. And, you know, what I love so much about Alcoholics Anonymous and in my group in particular is that we show up for people. Like, we give people baby showers. We show up for people when their parents die. You know, we're not just an AA group. You know, we are people who support each other in life, and, you know, we've walked through, like, some hard stuff together, me and Amy, and, like, if you want to stay sober, and I could speak for this group, too, you know, there's, we will do anything, we will go to hell and back for you. If you want to stay sober, we'll go to hell and back for you. We'll show up for you. But if you want to drink, and you want to go to those dark places, you're going to have to go alone. And I'm sad that you had to leave us, Amy, but I'm grateful that you're here now. And I love you. Thank you. So as time has gone on, like, I have got this amazing career of, it's just kind of funny how things work out. You know, I used to steal hospital services and, you know, steal, you know, the money of doctors by giving them these, you know, fake socials. And I work in an industry now where I am able to be of service to physicians. I do marketing in the medical field, and, it's crazy. Like, I get to look at, I've worked with doctors, and I get to look them in the eye. Like, that is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not me. Like, the fact that I can look anybody in the eye, I never want to forget that I look down at people's shoes. Like, I could not look you in the eye. I felt like such a piece of crap. And taking the steps and doing what my sponsor asked me, like, I get to fit not only in my skin, but I get to look you in the eye. I never want to forget that. You know, I love being a mom. Like, I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they've never had to see me drunk. And I just love what you guys have done for me in my life. I had this experience this last 4th of July where I took my kids to go watch fireworks. And we had a long AA day. Like, you know, we've got, there's so many great groups around my home group. But, you know, we'd gone to 3 AA parties that day. And we finally were home, and it's finally time to watch the fireworks. And I pushed them in my little double stroller Cadillac to the high school, and we're watching these fireworks, and it's just so magnificent, and this music is playing, and the fireworks in the sky, and like I was so like filled up from like fellowship and good living and being a self-supporting woman. Like, I don't have to sleep with anybody. I don't have to take off my clothes to pay my bills. Like, I can look you in the eye. I went on vacation last year. I got to go to Brazil, and I got to dance in the Saturday night samba parade, and I didn't have to hustle any guy to do it. I paid for it with my money. That's freaking miraculous, people. I love that. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for that. We're watching this fireworks, and I've got this tears rolling down my face, and my son says, "Your heart is full, Mommy." Because my kids don't ever see me cry because I'm sad. You know, my kids know that if I cry, it's because my heart is full. And I love the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. If you're new, I hope that you... Thank you. If you're new, I hope that you grab a cup of coffee, get a seat, give yourself a break, and welcome to the good life. Thanks.